Welcome to National Bugle Radio, coming to you from the brand new kosher-tified mobile studios, shall we call it the Koshermobile? Well, broadcasting from the mean and hot streets of sunny, beautiful downtown Burbank, today I have as my guest Mark Dankoff. Mark, are you with me?
I sure are. I sure are. I sure am. You say good, I sure are when you've been up all night. Yeah, I sure am. And once again, I'm in a parking lot today. I guess you're operating temporarily from a parking lot as well in another part of the country. But boy, I tell you, I saw a real hot lead story at CNN that might unravel some of these poisoning cases and as they relate to all kinds of things, including the war in Syria.
Okay, so poisoning cases, could this be the Scribble case? Because Theresa May has told us the Russians did it. Do we need any more evidence than that?
Well, I tell you, in this particular case, CNN is now reporting with great anguish that Pussy Riot activist Pyotr Verzilov was poisoned in Moscow, and he is in a toxicology unit in a Moscow hospital in intensive care. This is the guy, of course, who ran out into the field in the World Cup final that was held at Luzhniki Stadium there in Moscow. And, of course, this Pussy Riot organization is described by CNN as a Russian feminist punk band. And last but not least, these are the people who several years ago were arrested at Christ the Savior Cathedral in Moscow for singing the so-called punk prayer anthem, which was aimed at the Russian President Vladimir Putin. CNN takes care not to tell their readers and listeners these people did inside the temple, inside the cathedral.
I want to clear some of these things up
so that our listeners are up to speed on all of this. So
you're breaking up on me, sir.
Okay. How am I doing now?
Better.
Okay. So someone ran out into the World Cup finals when Croatia had all the momentum, and it stopped the game when Croatia was looking good and they won the game. Is this the same guy? Is he married to one of the females?
I'm not sure what his personal background is.
I just want to bring in this one last thing. Was involved in a protest in a museum, which involved this pregnant woman from Pussy Riot and some of her female friends filming. Okay, we're having one.
Very good, sir. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network, just like I did in the old days on Mark Dankoff's America. Only this time I'm doing it for Dr. Patrick Slattery of National Bugle Radio, while our wonderful RBN technician continues to get Patrick back on the line with us. We have been discussing a series of things related to a story that's out there now on CNN, talking about Pussy Riot activist Pyotr Verzilov and the fact that he has been poisoned. He is in a Moscow hospital, a toxicology unit in intensive care. This is the same guy who rushed the field in the World Cup finals at Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. This is the guy who was involved in the so-called punk prayer song that was directed at Vladimir Putin at Christ the Savior Cathedral in Moscow several years ago. CNN, of course, took care not to tell any of its listeners or readers about Pussy Riot's criminal activities inside that cathedral.
And I was just trying to add before, inside of a Moscow museum, that they filmed themselves, the Pussy Riot female members and their male counterparts, filmed themselves having sex inside of a museum. And then they put that up on the internet as if it was some sort of protest against evil Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, exactly. And as I understand it, when they were in the cathedral, the Christ the Savior Cathedral, they deliberately engaged in unspeakable acts of desecration against the icons there, both involving the Virgin Mary, the Mother of Jesus Christ, the Theotokos, as well as Jesus Christ himself. So this is a very vile group of people that clearly is a part of this anti-Putin movement worldwide that is taking money from such individuals as George Soros and so forth and so on. And what's interesting is that when we look at this particular story today, obviously the Russian government would have had no interest whatsoever in undertaking an action of this kind against this individual because of all of the false flag spin that accompanies this Skripal poisoning, which the British government insists was carried out by two Russians. We can discuss that story a little bit now, if you wish, along with what George Galloway, the former UK parliamentary member, has said to Russia Today, where he has absolutely discredited the official British account of this so-called of this poisoning.
Well, let's hear about what George Galloway have to say about it. He's somebody very well known. He's had a very high profile. He was against the Iraq war, so many of our listeners would know about him. But at any rate, very well known former parliamentarian.
Yes, George Galloway, of course, should be known to many of our listeners for all of his activities during these expeditionary wars since 9/11. Giving Western people and those not living in the West who understand English a particular amount of insight as to all the phony stuff that has been going on both with the British and the American government and the Israeli in regard to all kinds of mischief and false flags and lies. That having been said, people who want to check out what George Galloway has told RT will want to look for the September 11th story there that's entitled "Explosive Skripal Allegations May Blow Up in Syria," unquote. Now, Galloway underscores a series of things that absolutely destroy the official Western and specifically American and British news media spin on what has been attributed to Russian intelligence. The first is this. Galloway points out, which I have seen nowhere else, that the head of the anti-terrorism unit for Scotland Yard has stated that he has no evidence whatsoever that the Russians were involved in this poisoning. None. Nada. Zip. Zero. And yet, as Galloway points out, the British media is not reporting what their own Scotland Yard head of their anti-terrorism unit has stated on this subject, but all of the invective and all of the lies that have been coming out of the British Prime Minister and all of these circus appearances before the British Parliament, where this totally unsubstantiated story, which has all kinds of holes in it, if one proceeds to read what else Galloway has told RT on September the 11th, are considered, causes to shake our head, where clearly we understand that as the United States and Britain and the Israelis in particular, the Saudis secondarily, are all behind this business of trying to false flag these chemical incidents in Syria with their White Helmets organization and with the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights in England, which has a lot of connections to the usual suspects. But now they've attempted to expand this narrative, certainly with the Skripal poisoning and the official account of what happened there, which Galloway discredits. And then, of course, today on CNN, this poisoning of this so-called Pussy Riot activist, Pyotr Verzilov, we can begin to see that this is not simply a question of trying to sell the British and American publics in particular on the Russian narrative as it relates not only to Russiagate and to Mueller and Rosenstein and Comey and company related to Trump and alleged Russian intervention in the American political election, but now when we start getting into this whole issue of chemical weaponry and biological weaponing, weaponry and poisoning people and so forth. These attempts to falsely tag Assad and Putin with what has been going on in these events since 2013 has now been expanded to the Skripal incident in Britain. And clearly CNN is trying to link this poisoning of this Pussy Riot activist in Moscow to the larger issues related to alleged Russian and Assad administration nefarious actions as it involves Syria and certainly the Skripal poisoning incident as well. So it's all a part of a seamless garment, and people today like Paul Craig Roberts and Ray McGovern are clearly seeing through these kinds of narratives to emphasize once again that all of this is a pack of lies.
And just for to remind listeners, Paul Craig Roberts was a former assistant secretary of treasury in the Reagan administration and longtime Wall Street journalist, I guess. And Ray McGovern was a long-time career and co-founders of what is it? Sane something
intelligence professionals for sanity.
Oh,
VIPs. Yes.
Yeah.
And so, I think it's noteworthy in the McGovern case that Ray was at the highest level involved in helping to produce the final drafts of these national intelligence estimates that were provided to the President of the United States on his desk every morning. So this guy is hardly some low-level CIA clerk or something. He clearly was involved in American intelligence analysis at the highest level that involved the Oval Office. So
These are people who are at very high levels within the establishment and are now just speaking out. I shouldn't say now just speaking out, have been speaking out for many, many years.
Yes, absolutely. And so when we look at some of these narratives, including what Galloway does on RT in shooting a number of holes into the official story of what happened in this so-called Skripal poisoning there in Salisbury, it's absolutely disturbing that none of the things that contradict the official narrative are being given any fair play at all in these Western multinational pro-Zionist media outlets. And all of this really dovetails, in my judgment, with things I've covered over the longer term historically, whether you're talking about the official narrative on Pearl Harbor, talking about the official narrative on the Kennedy assassination, and certainly as we have just passed the 17th anniversary of 9/11, many of us have been revisiting what was said then, what seemed ludicrous to many of us then, just became more ludicrous over time as more researchers, and I'm talking about researchers with professional credentials in physics and pyrotechnics and so forth that are the equivalent to what Paul Craig Roberts and Ray McGovern would offer us in their respective fields. They've told us that the official story is scientifically bunk. This certainly is corroborated by what lay people like myself see and the way that these buildings came down. And then, of course, I'm one of the people among many who has delved into the Israeli angle on this 9/11 case and made the same conclusions that Christopher Ketchum made for Counterpunch in 2007, although he was being a little more careful and tactful there than, say, people like myself were in presenting all of the evidence on Israeli involvement in that affair that was being presented to the international press.
Well, because this week was the 7, I want to ask you a little bit about it, because you probably have looked into it more than I have. I was hearing on another broadcast, actually, I guess it's the Daily Show, but they had a guest named Ryan Dawson.
Yes.
And he sounds young, and I believe he lives in Japan, but he was also referring to Michael Collins Piper, who I know is somebody that you were very familiar with.
I knew Mike pretty well.
Right. And I think he's somebody from a similar perspective. And this Ryan Dawson is somebody who has been using Freedom of Information Act in order to gain access to documents. And he was describing, quite an Israeli involvement in 9/11. Could you encapsulate that involvement in 9/11? What do we know about it, and what do we not know but maybe can reasonably ascertain?
Well, I would go back in terms of the more detailed case that I presented on this. I certainly would point people again to what I discussed with Kourash Ziabari for the Fars News Agency of Iran a number of years ago. If you search Ziabari, Dankoff, 9/11, Israel, it'll come right up for you. And the more detailed version of this with all of the known facts, as I understand them, will be there in a format where people can read and think and weigh and consider. But suffice it to say that a number of things that day related to the events that transpired prior to the actual attack itself, as well as the involvement of some Israelis in filming the attack, who had clearly set up shop prior to the attack taking place, and who were high-fiving one another at the time that the buildings had come down. This deals with the subsequent apprehension of these people in New Jersey, as I remember the story now, who were tied up with an organization called Urban Moving, which proved to be an Israeli front.
And if not Urban Moving, I think they also had something called, I don't know, White Hat Moving, White Something Moving, which was owned by the same.
Yes.
Owned by the same individual, Israeli individual. Actually been the movers of one of these alleged hijackers.
Exactly. And so those are the kinds of links that my article or my interview with Kourash Ziabari would get into, as well as some other people that have written on this narrative. I'm trying to remember the name of the website that's out there that tends to have a lot of this information on the Israeli angle in one central location. Check out on Google something called Israel Did It. I think maybe that's where you would find this compendium of data that has been amassed in one place. But the long and the short of it is these individuals who were arrested were later deported without any charges being proffered by the United States government. They later turned up on statewide television in Israel to talk about the fact that they were there to film the event. And the statements that these individuals made clearly indicate that they had foreknowledge of what was going to happen. So many of the individual facts that my interview with Kourash Ziabari will get into underscores that.
Is this interview something that's already published that people have access to?
Yes, absolutely. It's been out there for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And again, if people will Google Ziabari, Ziabari, Ziabari plus Dankoff plus 9/11, they'll find it that way. If they simply Google my name with 9/11 and Israel, it's likely to come up that way as well. But certainly in reading through all of this, to me, the perhaps the most significant aspects of this for purposes of this brief ad hoc conversation on the radio, get back to who benefited. Benjamin Netanyahu made the statement right after it happened that the event was very good.
He blurted it out.
Yeah, he blurted this out.
Okay. All right. Well, we're just going into the break, but we're going to continue this conversation on the other side.
Very good.
No, very good. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu said.
Yes. Very good.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Welcome back to the show. National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Mark Dankoff. And Mark Young is part of this moving company level, but seemed to know what was going on. They were there to film the towers coming down. That leads to all sorts of questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, it leads to questions which my interview with Zia Bari gets into in regard to what clearly was advanced knowledge on the part of Israeli intelligence that this was going to happen, because there were warnings to certain people in New York and some of their own people with World Trade Center connections 2 hours before the event to vacate the area. Then, of course, there's our old friend Larry. Wasn't his name Rosenstein? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, Rosenstein.
What's that? Silverstein.
Larry Silverstein, the owner of the World Trade Center.
So. Yeah, who a series of weeks before the event became the owner of those buildings and took out an incredible amount of liability insurance on those towers many more times what had been the case. And actually, after the event had transpired, I'm trying to remember the amount of profit he made in the destruction of those buildings. I think it came out to something like $4.5 billion, maybe. You'll have to check that figure again online, because I didn't go back and read my notes from long ago on this subject before coming on. But he, of course, was on a first-name basis with Benjamin Netanyahu. It's interesting that Silverstein was not present that day, as he had been on every other day at that World Trade Center building.
Well, who else wasn't present at the World Trade Center building? You know, I mentioned it. It's young, relatively low-level Israelis. I mean, they may well have been Mossad. I assume they were Mossad, because lots of Israelis come straight out of their compulsory military service and go straight into the Mossad. But relatively low-level. Who else weren't at the World Trade Center building that morning?
Well, as you look at it, I can tell you a few people who weren't there. I don't know their names, but they clearly were people who had prior access to that building.
What I was leading at was, I want you to get into that, but were there any Israelis that died in 9/11?
Maybe a handful, but I think there's been a lot of statistical analysis of it in terms of the total number of lives, Israeli lives, that one would have expected to have been lost that day, just on the basis of stats and percentages that were not lost. Because, in fact, there was a tip-off and there was a foreknowledge on the part of many of these people that circumstantial evidence and frankly, that which goes beyond the circumstantial underscores this. So clearly there was something amiss in this whole situation. And then, of course, when you add to this all of the information that goes well beyond my professional expertise, dealing with physics and dealing with the science of what brought those towers down, two things come to mind. The first is that some of the most prestigious physicists in this country in the 9/11 truth movement, people with PhDs in physics from places like MIT and so forth and so on, and this fellow from Brigham Young University who began to speak out on these subjects, this doctorate in physics, who subsequently got into a lot of establishment trouble for being one of the first to question the scientific narrative of the official U.S. governmental account. When you start looking at all of these people saying that those buildings could not have come down in the way that the United States government says that they came down, and this gets into all kinds of technical analysis that relates to the temperature of jet fuel when it's burning, as opposed to the temperature that is required to melt steel.
Yeah,
that's just one of many issues.
That's one of many. That's something I've heard about a lot, but that's one thing I've pushed back at because the tensile strength, the strength of steel as a foam, and so it doesn't actually have to melt in order for it to weaken. But there's all sorts of other questions.
Yeah, especially how Building 7 came down. There was no aircraft, even if you accept the official story, there was no aircraft that struck Building 7. It came down in its own footprint in the precise fashion of the other two buildings. And, of course, we have audio tape of Larry Silverstein himself giving the order to blow it or to blast it or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So in this particular event, when you start looking at...
Pull it was the term.
Pull it. That was it.
Yeah.
Pull it. So when you start looking at this, the whole question of the airplane narrative on the buildings can't cover Building 7 because Building 7 was never struck by an aircraft.
Now, right now we're talking about down, but really the how isn't necessarily the most important. Why is more important, and then probably who is the $64,000 question? Who was really...
Who benefited? I think Cui Bono.
And who benefited?
Cui Bono in Latin, who benefited? And clearly, as I think I've discussed on a number of occasions in the past, and including on several shows yesterday, the project for the new American century and the Zionist agenda
were the clear
profiteers in this.
We'll talk about that on the other side of the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech. Quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to National Bugle Radio. It is our On the Road edition with Mark Dankoff. Mark Dankoff and I being both broadcasting from remote locations somewhere in the heat wave, because I think the whole country. But we have been talking about the Israeli involvement in 9/11. And where were we just when we left off, Mark?
Well, I think maybe that we were just discussing Michael Collins Piper briefly, my late friend with the American Free Press. And Mike, I know for a fact, of course, believe that Israel did it. And the fascinating thing is that led us into a discussion of brief discussion of Mike Piper's magnum opus, the book Final Judgment, dealing with the David Ben-Gurion, Meyer Lansky Israeli nuclear program link to the Kennedy assassination in Dallas in 1963. One has to read the book to understand how plausible that case is. But suffice it to say that Piper demonstrates all kinds of things that happened that day in Dallas that would fit the narrative. But in the big picture, he demonstrates that Meyer Lansky was the biggest American crime syndicate figure in Cuba, in Batista's Cuba. It was Meyer Lansky, not Sam Giancana or Johnny Roselli or Santos Traficante, who had lost the most in Havana as a result of Castro's revolution there. It was Meyer Lansky who had direct links to Jack Ruby, the assassin of Lee Harvey Oswald, Jack Rubenstein, who, as it turns out, had been a Zionist gunrunner in the late 1940s for the so-called Habilian Association, was based in Dallas, Texas, and was unknown. And when you start looking at this, I think the point of all of this is that when people say, why would our best friend in the Middle East do this to us at 9/11, The fact of the matter is, when you go back to the Levant affair in the early 1950s in Egypt, you look at the Kennedy assassination, Israel's deliberate attack on the USS Liberty in 1967, and then, of course, the spy cases, the Pollard spy case, the Benamy spy case, the IPAC spy case, the Apollo, Pennsylvania, NUMEC nuclear raw materials theft, which you I have discussed in the past, Patrick. This fits, the 9/11 narrative fits Israel's actions in black operations directed at the United States when necessary since its inception. Okay. And then clearly in 9/11, looking back at the Project for the New American Century in 1996 and their document produced then called A Clean Break, A Strategy for Securing the Realm.
Written by some of the very same people who wrote the PNAC, the Project for a New American Century document.
And these are people who are household names. Jews who are household names in the Zion, Richard Pearl, all the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's solve 9/11, and then if we have any time left over, we'll solve the Kennedy assassination as well.
Yeah, right. That's right. In the remaining time.
So, Michael. So, all right. Now, I don't want people just to think that we or you or I are automatically for just because. So in the first half of the show, you mentioned a whole lot of very strange coincidences regarding Israelis in 9/11. And bring up Michael Collins Piper. Does he or yourself, I mean, so Israel was behind it. We can see who benefits, and they did benefit, and they got us, they exploited 9/11 to get us to invade the middle, overturn Iraq and install a government, and they got basically a protect in Kurdistan, and we've gone into all these other countries, Libya, and we've basically set up ISIS in Syria and on and on. Now, it's his idea or your idea that that the Mossad basically orchestrated these 19 Muslim hijackers, or what?
If we have good reason to believe
they were behind it.
At bare minimum, they had advanced knowledge of the attack. At a bare minimum, okay. I would argue that the links were more significant than that. I don't think we've got time to cover all the reasons today why I suspect that. But suffice it to say that this Israeli link to Al-Qaeda in cooperation with Al-Qaeda is certainly not something that should cause people to say that that's just illogical or that doesn't make sense. It's making all the sense in the world in Syria, isn't it, folks, where clearly Israel is in full-fledged cooperation with Al-Qaeda in Syria. The other thing, and I don't have the notes in front of me, but Michael Collins Piper wrote the article on this. He and I discussed it before he wrote the article. On a man in Lebanon, whose name I can't remember because I haven't gone back in the archives in my notes before coming on today, but this was a gentleman in Lebanon who was supposedly a big anti-Israel subversive with something of a terrorist profile, and he was supposedly working on behalf of Hezbollah and all of these other elements that the Israelis want to get out of southern Lebanon. At all cost. And yet, after this man's death, it was revealed that during his entire career, he had been a secret agent of the Israeli Mossad organization. Mike Piper wrote the defense, and this appeared in the New York Times, by the way, which mentioned these allegations and so forth, with the overseas intelligence sources being quoted anonymously, who said that was in fact true. But even more interestingly, the New York Times admitted when the news on this guy's death finally broke that one of these 9/11 hijackers was a cousin of his. So here you had a situation where a guy with the big time anti-Zionist, virulently anti-Israel anti-Netanyahu, anti-Likud orientation that allegedly had been involved as a spy with Hezbollah, who allegedly had done all of these terrible things that involved crimes against the Zionist state, whether in Lebanon or elsewhere. As it turns out, he had been a double agent during his entire career working for Israeli intelligence, and there was a direct family link to one of those 19 hijackers who allegedly did what he did at the behest of al-Qaeda on September the 11th, 2001. Now, this was mentioned one time in the New York Times, and then it disappeared. I would imagine that if you search Michael Collins Piper's name and get into this narrative that I just mentioned here on the air, that the particular details will come up again. I had also covered the story at the time, frankly, for RBN here at the Republic Broadcasting Network back in my old days of having the Mark Dankoff's America on this network. I may have even had Piper on the air. I don't recall now. But I had one or two guests on the air where we were discussing this particular episode with reference to what Mike had written that he had researched that went beyond the bare facts as reported in the New York Times at that juncture. So we're probably looking in the 2007 time frame when all of this transpired. But these are the kinds of things that surface for a moment, perhaps if one is lucky, in some faction in mainstream media, probably on page 31 of Section C, right? And then never heard from again. This sort of thing is typical as it comes to any credible evidence that questions the official line on any of these things, much like I mentioned today with the George Galloway expose on all of the things that don't add up in the British account of what happened with this Skripal poisoning there in Salisbury. He indicates that they have cameras that show definitively that the two people who lost their lives at one time and had some sort of a link to Russian intelligence left their apartment at 9:15 before 9:15 in the morning. They never returned. These guys who allegedly carried out these poisonings did not arrive on the premises until 11:48 that morning. Then, of course, when we start getting into the whole business of this so-called nerve agent that was painted on this doorknob that supposedly was 8 to 10 times as powerful as VX nerve gas, it's very clear that had that been the case, that probably everyone within 100 yards of that building would be dead or would have died in that circumstance back on March 4th. That didn't happen. And then, of course, all of the other things that don't fit the official narrative coming into play, including the fact that with all of the film evidence as to the arrival of these two suspects there on the premises of this apartment complex, as well as their appearances after the fact in all these shopping situations there in front of store windows and so forth, at no time were they wearing any kind of protective clothing or gloves or anything of the sort. So they've been involved in utilizing an agent that was supposedly 8 to 10 times as strong as VX nerve gas, which is the official British line. They would have died along with everyone else. So there's simply too many things that Galloway gets into in this interview, which debunk the official story. And that's the same type of thing that began happening years ago for those of us old enough to remember, with the cracks in the canvas of the Warren Commission narrative on what happened to Jack Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the 17 years since 9/11, everybody from David Ray Griffin to Michael Collins Piper to myself with Karaj Ziabari some years ago was connecting dots and sharing information that did not support the official story at all, either the scientific end of it or the political conspiracy that I do believe was behind it.
Okay, so with what's going on this year in Britain and the nerve attacks, ass attacks and seem to be designed to, hijack or maintain Zionist control over American foreign policy to Syria with regards to Russia. When you talk about 9/11, that seems to have been intended to hijack American foreign policy and maybe American domestic security policy, whether that was an intended target or just fortuitous.
Which I think it was.
It may well have been.
Yes.
And, you know, that's something obviously bit Israel and the diaspora community here. When we get back to, because now it's time to solve the Jack Kennedy assassination. When we go back there, you know, you hear people talk about, well, the Federal Reserve, banking, maybe foreign policy. But was Michael Collins, was he more focused on the Israeli nuclear program, which Jack Kennedy seemed determined to prevent Israel from acquiring a bomb?
You know, I don't know when Mike first started getting into that kind of research. I don't know if in the beginning of his book, The Foreword to Final Judgment, he discusses which cart was before in front of which horse in regard to which of those topics led to discovery on the other. That's an excellent question. I don't think I can address that without going back and seeing if I can find something either in Final Judgment or in notes that Mike has given me in the past that would clarify that relationship. But, you know, interestingly enough, once again, when we get back to some of these things that we've been talking about here on the air, it does dovetail not simply with the foreign policy into this, but also with what clearly has been the development of an American domestic police state in the United States since 9/11, the USA Patriot Acts, the particular circumstances that govern the so-called Foreign Intelligence Surveillance mm-hmm. Act. We get into the National Defense Authorization Act. When you look at all of these different legislations, including two or three that I haven't even mentioned here on the air, it's obvious that we are living in an age, especially with the kind of technology that we have today, of warrantless surveillance of anyone that they want to surveil without court warrants because of such things as cell phones and conversations like the one we are having now mm-hmm. openly in the air, which is being heard by the National Security Agency Global Internet Surveillance Organization.
And I want to ask about that, yeah.
Right here in San Antonio. And so this, you know, raises all kinds of questions in regard to probable cause, in regard to warrants, in regard to the things that the executive branch of the government and the American intelligence community do routinely or are capable of doing without any kind of oversight by Congress. And we're basically, as near as I can tell, the judicial branch of the American government has abrogated its responsibility to keep an eye on these people as well. Paul Craig Roberts actually gets into this today in this piece on Lou Rockwell. It's entitled Armageddon Rides in the Balance. Just in as far as the narrative on Russiagate, Roberts underscores once again that this whole business of Russia hacking of emails, Podesta's mm-hmm. emails, Clinton's emails, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's emails is pure poppycock. There's no evidence for it whatsoever. All of the evidence points to these materials and information having been downloaded on a thumb drive. Roberts goes on to discuss the fact that there was no prima facie factual basis for Rod Rosenstein, according to federal law, being able to dial up this Mueller special prosecutor, special investigative appointment and subsequent process, which clearly is aimed at getting Donald Trump out of office. And then, of course, we start looking at the war powers of the chief executive and the fact that Congress has, over a period of decades, abrogated its responsibilities in regard to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, in regard to the War Powers Act and all the rest of it. Now, since 9/11, seem to be increasingly open as an American public to letting a chief executive of the United States and the American intelligence community and the American military do whatever they want to do without any legitimate authorization whatsoever. Where's the classic proof of this? In Syria, right? We have mm-hmm. a full-fledged military and intelligence operation going on in that country, as well as in Yemen, right? As well as in a series of other places in Africa like Niger, where we as average citizens are just finding out about some of these things. And where's the congressional authorization for it? as far as Syria goes. There is no declaration of war on the part of the United States Congress that says that we are at war with Syria. There's not even the shred of the usual authorization to use military force, or AUMR, extant in this situation. There's certainly no, I could care less about the UN, but the UN Security Council hasn't authorized this either. And so we have...
Well, we're going to continue... Yes. We'll have to continue this on the other side of the break.
Very good.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Welcome back to the show. welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio. So we only have a few minutes left, and I want to ask you, you're talking about technology, you were talking about the NSA. One major development since 9/11 has been the rise of these social media and internet companies run often by Zionist Jews who are able to collect, you know, talking about Facebook, talking about Google, able to collect information on us like J. Edgar Hoover or Beria or, you know, the KGB nobody could have ever dreamed of.
Well, I think that's exactly right, and that gets into something that deals with people friendly with Israeli intelligence, or in some cases, Israeli intelligence operatives or Israeli technology companies that are very, very chummy with some of these organizations that you've mentioned. I would point people to some of these recent meetings that have taken place with the executives of Facebook, Google, YouTube, Twitter, Snapchat, so forth and so on, have been meeting in Silicon Valley with the idea in mind that they're going to do everything that they can to absolutely stage manage these off-year elections and to stage manage the 2020 election in order to produce what is in their minds a more satisfactory outcome than they had when they were clearly trying to push for Hillary Clinton to become the next president of the United States. And this cuts really deeply into something that you and I have experienced personally, Patrick. I know Jonas E. Alexis at Veterans Today tells me that he started having very responsible videos that have been removed by YouTube for one reason or another. The last two broadcasts
earlier this week are already sanctioned.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Patrick Slattery and Mark Dankoff can get on the air, and we can talk about John McCain in one show. We can talk about Idlib province and Sarakib and Idlib province and Jashir al-Sigur and Idlib province with reference to the Constellus and Olive Group organizations and their relationship to British and American and Israeli intelligence from public sources, publicly verifiable sources, or we can simply talk in more general terms as we did yesterday about 9/11 and about Trump being neocon in Syria. And lo and behold, we are banned in 40 countries abroad on YouTube for simply talking about that, which is pieced together from factual and in some cases mainstream sources.
Well, that's why everyone needs to support RBN, because you can listen to it live before it's censored, or you can go to the RBN archives, or you can go to RBN and push on the donate that. Back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. Exclusive.